to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowland, and with me is Derek Spesh.
Hello.
How's it going, Derek?
Fantastic, man. It's going good. I'm excited. It's turning into a warm fall.
Right? I'm going to say it again. We're not getting snow until December.
And when we do get snow, according to our Farmer's Almanac, we're supposed to get a lot of snow this year.
Is it going to be a big one this year?
That's
because it's been really hot.
That's the Farmer's Almanac. But that's like, you know, people who use dowsing rods to find water.
I would put the Farmer's Almanac one step above weathermen any yes, day of the week.
Yes.
There are so many things out there, like everything from the stripes on the woolly caterpillar.
Oh, yeah.
The distance. If the bees build their hives high,
you know,
it's going to be a lot of snow. If they're lower towards the ground, it's going to be less snow.
Yeah, exactly.
And like this stuff has been going on for like
thousands and hundreds and thousands of years.
You know, these want to call them, for lack of a better term, old wives' tales, but they're still around and they're still being proven true. So,
and speaking of things that have been around a while,
you,
yes, you and me, way too long. The horseshoe crab.
Yeah, what about it?
Apparently it's been around for billions of years.
Yeah.
And it is a key provider for, like, for vaccination testing and so on. It's blue blood. It's one of the most expensive liquids on Earth.
Have you been, like, edumacating yourself again?
I just came across it. I come across stuff.
You went down the horseshoe crab wormhole.
It was
just
something popped up, right?
You did. You saw something about a horseshoe crab on the internet, and you spent 7 hours on the internet learning about horseshoe crabs.
What's interesting is that developmentally or evolutionary-wise, it's almost unchanged from like billions of years ago.
Yeah, tons of fossils.
Yeah, all show the same. Same animal.
Or maybe they're the same ones, they're just really old.
Or maybe they just keep visiting.
Because you get Greenland sharks, which live to be 400 years old.
Those get so old that they go blind.
Yeah.
Because their eyes just can't handle all the parasites and stuff like that. So they just swim around with their mouths open, hoping food's going to fall in it.
Right? Weird things, dude. Yeah. Weird things.
Yeah. So... interesting.
Horseshoe crabs from the Horseshoe Nebula.
Mm-hmm. That's probably where they're from.
I bet you.
Yeah.
I bet you it says that in the old Farmer's Almanac, too.
I bet it does. Yeah, exactly.
Which, did I say I would trust more than a weatherman?
Yes, you did. Yep. I know a weatherman, I stand by that.
Shall we go in this loop again? Episode 501. It was all just a loop over and over again.
It was a circular conversation.
It looks like it's going to be some nice, fine weather for the next foreseeable future.
Yes.
I mean, rain, but the salmon are running.
And last night it was until 3 or 4 a.m. It was, we sleep this time of year with the windows open, and it was like, oh my God, it's so hot. And I, at one point in the middle of the night, I'm like, I'm tempted to turn on the AC.
No, we've been sleeping with the windows open as well and the ceiling fan on.
Yeah.
Yeah, to which I found out our dog Athena is very wary of the ceiling fan. When you turn it off,
it's attacking.
It starts getting slower, and she sits on the bed and just stares at it as it gets slower.
She's waiting for it to attack.
Because it's going fast.
Yeah.
I guess she really doesn't pay attention to it.
Yeah.
But then all of a sudden you see this thing above you going zhoo,
yeah.
Zhoo.
Is that?
And then she just
three squirrels about to jump at me.
See, weird. Anyway, it's been nice, and I think there's probably some camping adventures still to come.
Mm-hmm.
Who went camping in this room right now? Raise your hand if you went camping,
like recently.
Recently,
I think you've camped recently.
No, I was in Japan.
Yeah. So you haven't camped since before Japan.
Yeah.
Oh, you're missing out,
right? Did you not go?
I did.
Raise your hand. Everybody's looking.
So we had one of Siobhan's coworkers. They had a premium campsite, waterfront campsite at Balsam Lake, which are very hard to get.
Mm-hmm.
So she tried to hand the campsite off to Siobhan. And in the end, they had, because Parks Ontario just made it so difficult, and then said, you can't do this, you can't do that, you can't transfer it, and I've done it before, there's a transfer fee. No, you can't. Anyways, so the woman canceled, and Siobhan, within an hour, booked it. So it was the only way we could do it. I think they just wanted to make extra money or something. I don't know.
Yeah, you're allowed to transfer their sites that you can post. Here's my site.
Yeah.
And it's going, and then you'll say, yeah, and then you can go back and get it. Or, yeah, there's a transfer.
Yeah,
a method to transfer.
Thing.
People do it at Mew Lake and Pog Lake and
so Ontario Park
everything
said, no,
in
it's
Algonquin
impossible.
All the time.
They said, no, we don't do that. It's impossible to do that.
What? Maybe the person you're talking
I've
to.
I've done it before. Anyways, so regards to that, that's the irritating part. The really irritating part is, so we discovered a new creature on the weekend. It is called a hickory tussock moth caterpillar.
Oh, yeah, the hickory tussock moth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you ever come across the caterpillar?
Are those not the, like, white ones with...
Exactly.
The green and yellow stripes?
No green. No green. It's white with little black diamonds, little black markings.
Oh, yeah. Did they not have a little bit of green on them? I thought they did.
No.
Okay, yeah.
They've got, like...
Yeah, don't touch them.
No. No. Don't touch them.
Oh, you didn't know that?
Oh, we knew that, but we didn't know it was as bad as it would be. But
oh, yeah.
They honestly were everywhere.
Yeah.
Like, they were just... We had hundreds of them on our campsite. They were everywhere. All over the tent. They were inside our shoes. They were... It was just everywhere. So, anyway, we knew that it was... You can't get the hairs on you. But you don't think of that when, like, you're packing up the tent or you're putting your feet in your shoes. So, we all have had them in our shoes. So, we all have rashes on our feet.
Ooh.
And me packing up the tent, jamming it into the stuff sack, I have it all up one arm and across my belly. And it's just, I had a little piece of one in my eye that bothered me for like 2 days. And it was like, it's horrendous. I've got bumps all over me. It was.
Did you pack the tent in the nude?
No, I had a jacket on. but you, when you're moving and you're hammering.
It's like fiberglass.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah.
Right?
They say it's comparable to poison ivy.
Eesh.
Yeah. The swelling's down. I just have this red rash, but I was swollen.
I've everywhere. Never seen more than a couple at a time.
We saw them everywhere. Like, you walk down the road and you can see all the splotches where cars drove over them.
Ooh.
But in our campsite, it's like you, at any one time, we had like 24 just around the campsite. We sat there at night watching them try to climb up the fire pit and fall off, climb up the fire pit, fall off, climb up the fire pit, fall off. It's like, give up, buddy. It's hot. Anyways.
So they take their anger out on you.
Yeah. So we were trying on Friday night and Saturday, we were like, hey, careful. Oh, watch out. There's one here. Oh, like you're constantly like,
paranoid.
Oh, another one. So we're trying to be careful. We picked them up with a leaf and put them on the edge of the campsite. Then they'd wander back in. But there were so many of them. And it was just everywhere at Balsam Lake. I've never seen so many caterpillars in my life.
Maybe that's why she canceled. And gave you the site.
Maybe.
Better you guys.
But I don't think she could have known. Anyways, at first we thought, hey, maybe we can get one of those little animal aquarium cases and maybe we can have a couple of pupae turn them into moths. That'd be neat. And by the end of the weekend, it's like, that ain't coming anywhere near me ever again.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that sucks.
Yeah, all of us, all four of us have rashes. It's like, it's horrible.
But I bet you learned a whole lot more about the moth.
The hickory tussock.
Right?
It looks nice as a caterpillar and a moth from the pictures.
Well, they look fuzzy and cuddly, don't they?
Fuzzy. Oh, yeah. Not cuddly.
Yeah.
Anyways, we've seen a lot of them, and we wanted to see the moth itself. That's why we're thinking about bringing one or two home. And its range is far and wide, so it's not like we've taken out of the range or whatever, because we first looked into it, and it's like, oh, it's like the entirety of southern Ontario and northern states, and from New Brunswick all the way into the prairies, it's like everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a large range. But, wow. Yeah, you don't want to get its little hairs all over you.
But yeah, other than that, how was your camping weekend?
It could have been better. It was cold and windy. So our site was, we had a waterside site. And so we had direct entry with stairs into the water. But it was, we also, because of that, it was cold and windy, like very windy. We tried to get out in a canoe and stand up paddleboard. We did get out for a little bit with, like, Siobhan and Beckett got out on the stand-up paddleboard for a short time, but it was kind of rough, so I came back in. And it was just by that time when they came in, because I was going to follow out with the canoe, it just, the wind really picked up, and we had big white caps, and it's like, well, no. So, yeah, it was, but as soon as you walked away from the shore, if we go up to the comfort stations and stuff like that, it was like, oh, it's hot up here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was pure wind.
Yeah, it was just, yeah. It was freezing cold wind. And so, yeah, it was, the tent rattled all night. And by early morning, it was like calm and flat. That's when they got out with the standard paddleboard. But the wind came back again. And so, yeah.
Good times. Good times.
We did have fun. It was like we had a couple really good meals, and we did a few really nice hikes. And it's a nice campground. It's a nice area.
Yeah, unless somebody gets hit by lightning, you're probably going to have a good time regardless.
It was surprisingly large campground.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they have campsites numbered right up to like 750 or so.
Really?
Yeah. It's huge.
And see, I've never been there.
Tons of hiking trails. I just know
lots of people go there, so I don't go.
Mm. So it's a really nice area. There's there's like a dozen different little internal campgrounds, loops and stuff. A lot of them are very exposed, but there's also some that are just deep in the forest. Lots of coverage. Lots of poison ivy, so we're careful with that too. So didn't have to worry about the poison ivy problem. It was a kind of pillar problem. But yeah, it was... We drove around the campsite because a lot of the areas were closed at the end of season. So we checked out a lot of campsites and did a bunch of hiking trails. And they even have some eco sites that are hiking only. You can't park near or on them. So it's a nice campground, Folsom Lake.
Yeah. Really, I know, nice. There's a lot of people. It's popular to go there.
Yeah.
I mean, Folsom Lake itself is like hugely popular.
Yeah, the area where we were, there was no empty sites. It was just packed full.
Yeah. Well, it's getting close to the end of the season, so everybody's thinking, got to get my last little weekend
the last
in.
Last one in, exactly.
And next weekend, they'll go last one in. The next weekend, last one in.
So, apparently this time of year is like rampant with those hickory tussock caterpillars. So, maybe not late season, but it's a bumper crop. And I've noticed as well, and I've seen it cycles, like I've seen a lot of pine trees with like, amazing amount of acorns on them or whatever, not acorns, that's
pine cones.
Pine cones, there you go, pine cones. And black walnut trees are having a bumper crop this year, so it's a bumper crop for plants and animals, apparently.
Yeah.
I don't know what that means otherwise.
I don't know. It means don't trust the weatherman.
Exactly. Like at my old house, we had this gigantic black walnut tree, and it was like 5 to 7 year cycles where we would, 1 year be for like, for 4 or 5 years be maybe a dozen or two dozen black walnuts will fall, and then every fifth or seventh year it's like,
there's a lot of animal and bug species that do that.
Yes, cycles, yeah.
They go through big cycles.
What's the cicada? There's two different cicada species, and they're on a 14-year and a 17-year cycle.
Something
and
like that, yeah.
This year, this summer, down the States, they lined up. Both species lined up.
Japan was like, and they're massive. I got video of these.
Oh, they're huge.
Massive cicadas just going to town.
Yeah.
And like, I'm getting right up there with my video, my phone taking videos.
And he's just going mad.
And he's just going mad. Right? But there's a lot of things that
it goes
go through
cycles,
that cycles.
Yeah.
Plants, animals, bugs, birds.
The sun.
Yeah.
We're coming into a solar maximum currently. A lot of solar activity over the next 2 years.
I know with the amateur radio, there's one of the bands, every 10 years, they would get really good.
Oh, okay.
And then, because with the sun and everything.
With the solar, yeah.
Yeah. And then the next 10 years ago, and then back up again really good, then bad, then good.
I wonder if it's a solar maximum or solar minimum that would work well. Because at the solar maximum, there's a lot of ionosphere and magnetic heliosphere activity. I wonder if that would bounce it back more, or at the solar minimum when there's minimal activity, if it works better. That'll be something I have to Google now.
Now he's got something else to Google and see if the hickory
tussock moth follows that same pattern.
Well, glad you had a good time regardless.
Yeah, it was good. We and really the fallout is like you know, yesterday and today after we got back. Mm-hmm. So we're making sure we wash everything. And now we have...
Air your tent out.
Well, see, that's another thing is it's packed away and
I would take
it's like,
it and
I'm
going
to have to take it out and hose it down or something.
Yeah. Because I would do it now because you're already covered in all the hives and
rashes. Yeah.
So do you want to do it now or do you want to do it...
A nice and fresh rash.
Next summer when you're taking it out into the woods for the first time.
Yeah.
You pull it out of the bag, and you're like, why am I so itchy? Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I would do it now, dude.
Yeah.
I would do it now. And we all know, insert Morgan Freeman's voice here, but he would not do it.
But he would not.
Well, speaking of Ontario parks, Ontario government is investing nearly $60 million to create more camping opportunities for families and outdoor enthusiasts at some of the province's most popular provincial parks, adding up to 300 new campsites, upgrading 800 campsites with electrical service. See, I'm going to get really right off the get-go here. Do you really need 800 with electrical service? Why don't you just make more campsites?
They must have done some sort of study because maybe they feel there's more people that are using electrical sites and they go the fastest. There's a lot more people with tow behinds and pop-up.
Oh, yeah, I know, but if it means...
So I wonder if that's what it is. Because you're not going to do it if you don't need it. If they find that they're booking up really quick, then I'm sure they did a study. It's not going to be a random, you know, hey, let's do this.
Doesn't mean I have to like it.
No, I know. I'm just saying. I don't think it was a random choice. I think they must have looked into it and said, hey, this is what we need. This is our internal study has determined this.
Yeah. As part of the government's plan to protect Ontario, this historic investment will make easier for people to camp at world-class Ontario park destinations while boosting domestic and international tourism that supports local businesses and jobs. This upgrade marks a major milestone for Ontario parks, the most significant expansion of camping opportunities in 50 years.
There you go.
Said Todd McCarthy, Minister of the Environment, Conservation and Parks. More people than ever before are looking to vacation in Ontario and across Canada to support their local communities. With hundreds of new and upgraded campsites, we're giving more people the opportunity to support local businesses and jobs while camping at Ontario parks and making memories to last a lifetime.
I would like to see them up, and I can only assume they don't mention it, but there's a few, was it Emily? There's a couple campgrounds that we've been to over the last couple years, and when you walk into the comfort station, you have a strong sense, a strong feeling that this was built in the 60s. Because it's like, okay, this is really rough shape. This is really old. And the only thing they've done to it in the last 50, 80 years was like paint it.
And wash it a couple times a day.
Yeah. They are nice and clean. That's one thing that I'm impressed by is Ontario Parks. They do keep their comfort stations clean.
Yep. Create 300 new campsites, upgrade approximately 800 with electrical over the next 3 years. The addition of new campsites will help meet the rising demand for high-quality outdoor experiences in some of the more of Ontario's most scenic and sought-after destinations. Part of the expansion, new campsites will be added at Driftwood, McGregor Point, Bon Echo, and Killarney provincial parks, and more parks to follow. At the same time, existing campsites at Sandbanks, which is always packed, Arrowhead, Bon Echo Provincial Parks will be upgraded with electrical services, with additional parks receiving electrified campsites in the future. Sandbanks, one of Ontario's most popular parks, with approximately 750,000 visitors each year, will see up to 73 campsites electrified by summer 2026. And you know what? Like, when we go up in winter to do some winter camping, like at Mew Lake and stuff like that in Algonquin, people like the electrical sites so that they can have a light. Like, they bring electric lights to put inside their hot tents and stuff like that, little heaters that they can plug in with a fan sort of deal. Yeah. So, I mean, stuff like this as well. But if they do it to the places that allow winter camping.
Yeah.
Because not all of them do. So that would be a definite boost for the electrical sites. Ontario Parks' phased expansion is prioritizing parks based on project readiness, cost effectiveness, and the ability to deliver high value to park users. Additional parks receiving new or upgraded campsites will be released at a later date. So yeah, maybe one of the ones you're going to will actually be on that list.
Maybe. And hopefully they'll do the upgrades off-season.
Or shoulder seasons.
We're going to cut up all the roads and dig new trenches through the campground in July.
Like, would not surprise me some days. But, yeah, I got to think they'll do most of it once. Or they'll close off parts at different, like in the shoulder season sort of stuff. Because not many people are using it like in June, May, April.
True. Early season, yeah. It'd be a good time of year to do it. And gives it a chance for grass to grow back over the dug up patches where they've buried cable.
Demand for camping opportunities in Ontario parks has surged over the past decade, with many parks reaching capacity during peak seasons. Part of the 2024 Ontario budget, Building a Better Ontario, the government committed $59 million over 3 years to expand camping opportunities and bring electricity to more campsites. The investment represents the largest addition of campsites in Ontario parks, like I say, in 50 years. Established in 1970, Sandbanks Provincial Park is one of the province's most popular natural attractions, home to the world's largest baymouth barrier dune formation. I didn't know that. I just know there'll be woo there because there's a lot of sand.
There is a lot of sand.
Procurement for electrical upgrades at Sandbanks began this summer, with construction scheduled to start later this month. Some of the upgrade sites are expected to be available for booking in summer 2026. It offers three expansive sandy beaches, over 12 kilometers of hiking trails, and discovery programming to an average of 750,000 visitors annually.
I'll be able to give you an update on the construction because we're going to be there for Thanksgiving.
Oh, see, there you go. Maybe go help out. Lend a hand. Take some pictures.
Dig some ditches.
Since 2018, the province has invested $76.1 million to make important infrastructure improvements in Ontario parks. 12.4 million visits since 2004. Ontario Parks is the largest provider of outdoor recreational opportunities in the province. Park visitors play a key role in Ontario tourism economy, generating spin-off benefits for nearby communities through local dining, shopping, and attractions. And I know, like, Algonquin Park, when it comes to when we were taking the kids there when they were small, like the educational opportunities offered at the parks.
Yeah.
Like any Ontario park we went to.
Yeah. Like, because my kids are of that age, that's one of the things we do. We see, okay, what's going on this week, whether we're McGregor or Emily or Algonquin or whatever. It's like, okay, let's see what they have going on because we need to know now. And so we can schedule, okay, on Thursday at 1, we know to be here. Mm-hmm. And there's very, very good programs being put on with, you know, different things that talk about animals or the plants and so on. It's very interesting.
Nature walks. Mm-hmm. Ariana learned all about loons 1 year and snakes. And we went 1 year and there was, I think it was from the University of Waterloo, there was a group of students up there studying bats.
Oh.
And they actually had a cage at the visitor center with a couple of bats in it. So the kids could go up and see a real life bat, not have it flying in their hair. So, yeah, all those little things are really cool. Hands-on stuff as well, right? So that's cool. All right, well, we'll have to keep an eye out for how well those new Ontario parks campsites
are. Interesting.
Yeah. Here's something you don't think of very often when you're out there paddling. Kirsty McMillan is a passionate sea kayaker. She's written about her love of marine animals and why paddlers need to be responsible when near them. Cetaceans are a group of marine mammals, including whales, dolphins, and porpoises. They all give birth to live young and breathe air. While sea kayaking around the UK, she's seen many species of cetacean and have developed a huge interest in identifying, reporting, and protecting the sea mammals. So she has different tips on paddling near whales, dolphins, and porpoises. It's not something we, I mean, we don't think
about it. No, we don't think about it. We're landlocked, sort of.
Yeah. I've to this day, I have yet to see a dolphin in Lake Ontario.
Yep.
You know, Lake Superior, I thought I saw a whale once, but I was wrong.
We used to hear rumors of sharks in the Great Lakes, mainly Lake Ontario. But I mm-hmm. think it's just a rumor that people like to mess with people.
Right.
Oh, there was a shark in Lake Ontario. Nah, I don't think so.
I'd like to see how it got there.
Well, I'd like to see how it survived coming out of salt water and going into fresh water.
Right. With an increased number of people taking up paddle sport and heading out onto the sea, it's important to remember we are sharing water with some of the world's largest and most intelligent creatures. And this is anywhere. Like, I know you see the down in Australia, New Zealand, over in the UK, off the coast of North America, even down the south, the whales, you know, especially people. I saw a video the other day. There, people are sitting there down in, I want to say St. Lucia. I don't know if it was St. Lucia or not. I was more interested in actually what was happening on the video to find that they were. But there's this couple out there kayaking, and they see whales, and all of a sudden one just whoom, not right near them, but close enough.
Yeah.
And you could just hear the bam when it hits the water. Right?
Yeah.
So it's just doing the breaching stuff, and they're all just like,
whoa, that I wasn't underneath it.
Right? So just some tips. If you're in that opportunity that you're paddling near them. There are many species of dolphins around the UK, but the most gregarious is the bottlenose dolphin. 3.5 meters, 450 kilograms.
That's a big animal.
That's a big one. Powerful apex predators, despite their smiling faces. See, dolphins have always been portrayed as these friendly, life-saving animals.
There was a dolphin show back in the 70s.
Flipper,
that's it.
Flipper. Yeah. Hey, Flipper. They're highly sociable, often breach high out of the water. It is a criminal offense to willfully disturb cetaceans. And that's not the first time. Like, the UK isn't the only place that, like, I know when you're paddling down, like, New Zealand and stuff like that, if one comes, you're not supposed to touch it.
Yeah.
You're not supposed to reach out.
You don't go to them. If they come to you, you can't help it. You can't control them. But you're not supposed to seek them out and interact with them on purpose.
Right.
On your own violation.
If you see them, stay still or paddle parallel to them without any sudden changes in direction. Let them choose to come to you or not. Don't seek to interact with them, as human dependence can result in social separation from their pod. Increase the risk of fatal injuries from boat strikes, and there is a risk of being injured yourself. 100 meters is a safe distance, and if they do choose to come closer, limit your time with them to 15 minutes. See, this is something I've never heard. You know, like, I don't go checking out for dolphins.
Yeah.
But, yeah, there's just these things that you never hear about.
We don't get a lot of them in Ontario.
No. Dolphins may be protecting their calves, feeding or sleeping with half of their brain, essential so they don't drown. They don't want their dinner or nap disrupted. Your actions should not interrupt their behavior. She says, I've seen bottlenose dolphins many times from a kayak. Sometimes they are totally uninterested and go on their way. Other times they've breached, spy hopped, and approached to inspect the boats. They are the masters of their environment, and it feels very humbling, if slightly intimidating, when they get closer. See, like, a dolphin, I think, would be kind of cool to have him come up to you.
Mm-hmm.
Anything bigger, you'd be wary. Anything that looks like a killer whale, you would be very intimidated and wary. Sharks, of course. Yeah, we're just going home.
There's more and more sharks off the Nova Scotia, coast of Nova Scotia.
The great whites, right?
Yeah.
Whales around the UK coast, our smallest whale, can grow up to 10 meters in length, live around 50 years. The minke whale is sleek, speedy, and very stinky. See, this is what I'm saying.
Stinky minke.
Stinky minke. On a recent sea kayak expedition nearing the point of Ardnash Murchan, a peninsula in the Scottish Highlands.
There you go.
It's a big, big word. A large flock of gannets in sheer waters were enjoying a bait ball of fish beneath the surface. Among the barrage of birds, a fin and back appeared, rolling smoothly and then disappearing. Watching for a while longer, we realized that two minke whales had joined the feeding frenzy. Kept our distance, allowed them to enjoy their feast before they drifted off towards the small isles. UK is home to the humpback and fin whales, both of which are enormous and need to fulfill their equally gargantuan appetites. I can recommend the book How to Speak Whale by Tom Mustill, who was, unfortunately, landed on by a breaching whale whilst kayaking.
It didn't say if he survived or not. I meant to Google that.
I'm thinking he didn't, because his unfortunately was landed on.
Yeah, it just could be just unfortunately landed on. He was fine afterwards, but it knocked him in the water.
Maybe. Like all dolphins, it best practice to give whales space, especially if they're feeding. Oh, we saw the one a couple years ago, and last year even, the whales come up and got a kayaker. But however, I've experienced a heart-stopping moment when a young minke whale surfaced next to me in the Femi Islands. They are curious and intelligent creatures with complex language and culture. Maybe one day we'll even be able to communicate with them. And porpoises. I always thought dolphins and porpoise were the same.
They look the same, just smaller.
Hugely overlooked and undervalued cetacean, the harbor porpoise is shy and difficult to spot. Despite being rather unexciting in their behavior, they are somewhat cute and energetic. Some of the best porpoise sightings I've had are from a kayak, occasionally hearing their snorting breaths before finding their tiny triangular fins among the swell. They are just 1.5 meters in length, spend much of their time feeding and avoiding bullying gray seals and bottlenose dolphins. So seals and dolphins pick on them.
Yes, well, yeah, bullies, right?
Yeah.
Bullies of the sea.
Bullies of the sea. Off the Isle of Cana, a pod of porpoises came close to our kayaks. We sat still, kept quiet, and respectfully watched them forage around the edge of the tidal flow. Harbor porpoises also seem to enjoy tide races. From Point Linus on Anglesey, while searching for resource dolphins, I've seen porpoises dash around in 5 knots of tide. We'll see kayakers negotiating the race. Paddlers said they thought something was there, but little did they know that they were totally outnumbered by cetaceans, with some common dolphins also joining in the fun among the waves. Encountering cetaceans on our paddles can be a magical experience, but please remember to give them space and choice. That's the big thing right there. Don't follow. Don't
chase them down.
They are not there for our pleasure and pleasing. I mean, that's like if you're on a portage with your canoe and you see a wolf.
Yeah.
Are you going to chase it?
Chase it in the woods,
hey,
no.
Hey, buddy, come here. Yeah. Look at that bear. Let's go chase
it. Puppy. Can I pet the puppy?
Not pet that dog. They are wild and free as they should be. It is a huge privilege to get sightings while we paddle around the UK. If you're lucky enough to spot cetaceans, you can report it to National Citizen Science Projects, including Sea-Watch UK and Hebridean Whale and Dolphin Trust, or find a local citizen science group through social media. With warming waters and changes in fisheries, there are also some non-cetacean fins to watch, including bluefin tuna, basking sharks, and ocean sunfish. Those ocean sunfish are massive.
I saw a thing on them the other day, and they're saying that they bask. They bask to use the UV light to kill off parasites, because they swim so slowly that they do gain a lot of parasites. And apparently their body mass is so much fat that there's witnesses who said, they've seen like large chunks bitten out of them, and then you just dumbly swim along because they don't feel pain. They don't have a lot of pain receptors.
Really?
So these things are giant. They're like a giant, like 12-foot pancake type thing. These are huge fish, but they're just dumb, slow, and they don't feel a lot of pain. And the only reason they're so prolific is because like a single sunfish can have like millions of babies.
It's the pancake of the sea.
It's the pancake of the sea.
Yeah. Share the water with our marine creatures respectfully. Keep watch out for those fins in the waves.
Now, I haven't seen a lot of, and every time you see videos of like killer whales or orcas with paddlers, they generally ignore them, right? You
see a lot of videos, but they're curious. They're not aggressive.
But off of the Spain and Portugal,
yes,
since 2020,
yep.
Like there's a sub pod that have taught and learned how to attack sailboats.
Yep. Yeah, we chatted about that.
So they'll smash into sailboats, rip off the rudder, and ripping off the rudder generally puts a crack in the hull. And just last week, there was a couple of sailboats that were sunk.
And they are saying that there's an orca out there that is teaching other pods. Yeah.
This is what you do.
To do the same thing.
Yeah. Time to go to class.
So, and they say something somewhere along the line happened.
Yeah, somebody...
A sailboat hit... And then one of them or
it's
something.
Revenge,
or,
it's all revenge now. Yeah. It's going to be a new movie, I guarantee
right?
you. But I saw some recent videos, and you see the person on the sailboat, and when the rudder hits something, it's like having a car accident and it rips the steering wheel out of your hands. So the whale hits it, and suddenly the helm just wing spins, or if it's a rudder, it just pulls it out of your hand. And it's really shocking to see, and I've seen a lot of video just in the last 2 weeks of a bunch of attacks off the Iberian Peninsula, and these things are just hammering these sailboats, and then it shows the sailboat, it's like, oops.
And if it doesn't sink the boat, like, you've got no rudder.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oops.
Now what do I do? Yikes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, don't sail around the Iberian Peninsula, apparently.
But, yeah, yeah, when you see the videos of stand-up paddleboarders or kayakers and stuff like out there and the whales come up, usually you'll see them going by just doing their little...
Yeah.
Just enough and blowing the thing. Blowing the air out in the spray and then diving back in sort of deal, nice, graceful.
Mm-hmm.
But every so often one comes over to take a peek at, oh, what's this thing?
Nibble, nibble.
It's one of those kayak things. And then they just continue on their way. They're curious
How
beings.
How scary would that be? You look down and see a killer whale on its side looking up at you as it coasts on by. It's like, what does he want?
I'd be wearing the brown pants.
I'm not food.
Right?
Yes, you
because
are.
Because if you're sitting in that kayak and he decides to go for it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're done.
You're done. You got nothing to, you know.
Have you've seen them, so can you imagine them doing to you what they do to seals? Have you ever seen killer whales playing with seals?
Yes.
So it's like a cat playing with a dead mouse type thing. It's just
throws
it
back and forth and
it's like,
hits it with the tail.
No.
Uh-huh.
They're very smart animals. Very smart animals.
What's the white? I'm totally the white whales.
That would be the beluga. That
the
would
belugas.
Be the fish tube.
The tube of fish meat. Right. But there's some of them that they'll play.
Like
they've got when they'll throw a ball and they go down and grab. Or if you drop the phone,
I've seen the video. Somebody dropped their phone off of a dock, and the beluga whale went down, got the phone, came back up with the phone in its mouth, and gave it back to the person. Mm-hmm. It's like
intelligence.
What just happened? Well, killer whales have been known to fight in packs hunt in packs, and up north is they will in groups. They will. Pass underneath an ice floe with a porpoise on it or a seal on it. And the wave action will wash the seal off into the water. So killer whales have learned how to do this.
Right.
It's like, that's pretty smart.
Yeah. So when you're looking down and you're seeing that whale going under your boat on its side with his one eye looking at you.
He's like, I wonder what he would taste like.
He's seal shaped.
Yeah. Seal shaped, seal taste.
So if you're out there paddling and you see the big fins in the water, be respectful.
Well, also be respectful, but also because the last thing we need is to create the whale human war where like right now it's the orcas are taking out sailboats. You never know if they're going to get ticked off at kayakers and stand up paddleboarders.
Yeah, they'll stick to something big.
I don't know.
Yeah.
We are a food source.
For more than just them.
Yes.
Well, something a little bit closer to home here. After paddling more than 1,000 kilometers down the Ottawa River, and I've thought about paddling this route too. Now I know how long it'll take.
Too long.
I was about a week and a half off. After paddling more than 1,000 kilometers down the Ottawa River, Sean and Will Groves stepped onto Westboro Beach in Ottawa. Father-son duo were among a small group of paddlers, including some military veterans, who were greeted by dozens of supporters at the end of 5 grueling weeks on the river. Yeah, so I figure it'd be 3.5 weeks. It took them 5.
Yeah. That was a long time.
Yeah.
And they weren't, it wasn't a leisurely trip. They were doing like 6 to 12 hours a day.
Yep. On the easier days, we were probably paddling 6 or 7 hours. On the harder days, we were reaching 12 hours. It was quite the journey.
A lot of work.
Yeah. Journey which raised tens of thousands of dollars for mental health charity Wounded Warriors. Started August 18th at the river's headwaters on Lac de Outaouais in Quebec. It continued down the waterway through long stretches of untouched wilderness over rapids and high swells. Groves paddled alongside Mark Gasparotto, a military veteran and experienced canoeist who conceived of the trip after getting the idea from his cousin. The eventual route was split into 5 legs, including a stretch of rugged portages early on where the paddlers were forced to cut their way through the bush. Core group was joined by a rotating cast of supporters who followed along for shorter stretches of the journey. See, that's what the thing is if there's a massive trip, if you can't do the whole thing, then if maybe you can join in for little bits, it sort of makes you feel like you're helping out, right? Gasparotto, a former combat engineer who fought in Afghanistan, said the group covered between 40 and 50 kilometers a day, 6 days a week. As a former military man, everything went as planned, he said. It's what that money translates into in terms of programs and services and impacts on humans. When you get a group of people who want to support a noble cause and come together like that, it felt like the mission was accomplished. Sounds like a really good trip for a really good cause. If you want to find out more, go to woundedwarriors.ca and get more information on the charity and everything. But yeah, that's quite a good trip. Now, we've seen a few groups now
that are
doing this with veterans. They're doing the canoe tripping, the paddling,
yes,
and all that sort of stuff.
And so they're doing a bunch of expedition tripping, whether it's canoe, kayak, or I've seen some where they're doing mountaineering and hiking out west, mm-hmm, and so on. And I was just trying to find the name of it. There's multiple. There's Warrior Adventures Canada.
Yep.
There's Off Trail Odysseys. There's Mike Ranta. He did a whole thing for veterans in his Cross Canada expeditions.
Yeah, he raised money for that.
And so there's a lot. There's a lot of groups out there that do these things. And what they're doing is they're getting veterans involved in tripping, where it's more of a way to clear your head and get back into group activities and so on. A lot of people, mm-hmm, come out of some wartime situations or other activities where they're exposed to that, and so it's helpful to get people to, you know, clean the soul and get
back. They're finding that getting out into nature on these sort of things, out of the city, out of their own head,
exactly.
is really, really good for mental health.
Mm-hmm.
And they find a lot of them, that's the kickstart they need to get them back on track where they need to be. So it's good that there's people out there. 1,000-kilometer canoe trip, though.
That's big.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
That's huge.
Rutabaga.
Yes.
And I'm not talking the turnip thing.
No, I do like those rutabagas, too.
I don't.
No?
Nope. Can't stand them. I'm not a...
You're a turnip guy?
Nope. Not at all. Don't give me rutabagas. Don't give me turnips. Don't give me sweet potatoes. Don't give me broccoli. Don't give me cauliflower. Oh, wow. Don't give me asparagus.
I like all of those.
That explains a lot about you.
What? My mom fed us those things all the time we grew up.
Oh, they were on the table. All mm-hmm. right. Yeah, and you don't get anything else till you eat your vegetables.
Mom, what's the furry smelling thing?
Right?
Those are rutabagas. Eat them.
Yeah, there's days where they're being cooked in the house. You walk in the house, you're like,
whoa.
Somebody not spray the bathroom? Shut up. Yeah, no, I'm not. There's some vegetables I'll eat raw, but I will not eat them cooked.
Oh, okay.
Right? But, yeah, I've just never been a big... The vegetables I do like, they're pretty much the same, like, all the time. That's all I'll eat sort of deal.
Yeah.
So, like peas and beans and that sort of stuff. Carrots. Regular potatoes.
Mm-hmm. My brother's got a weird thing where he won't eat any vegetables that grown... I can't remember what his rule is. It's a weird rule. It's like anything that's grown on the ground. It can grow in the ground, so he'll eat carrots and potatoes.
So like melons and stuff?
So, yeah, so he
zucchini,
won't eat...
cucumber?
Yeah, those things. Anything that grows on the ground, touches really? The ground, he just won't eat it.
Now, I'll eat a cucumber... Like, all this has to do with paddling, too, right? So, I'll eat cucumber, but I don't like zucchini.
Mm-hmm.
Weird.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I can't think of anything that I won't eat. I'm not a fan of... the name escapes me. It's like they use it in Caesar salad a lot, the fish.
Sardines. Anchovies.
Anchovies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But those don't grow in the garden.
No, they tend not to.
Anchovies are not vegetables last time I checked.
I'm just thinking. I said there's very few foods that I won't eat. And
liver?
And one of them, no, I've got some liver in my fridge, in my freezer right now.
Really?
Yeah.
That explains more about you. I'm learning more every day.
I also have I'm waiting to swing it on the family, but I also got a couple packages of frog's legs that where I'm going to cook them up in a nice lemon pepperette sauce and eat up. What's these little tiny bones? Don't worry about it. So, yeah, I've got frog's legs in the freezer right now, too. So I'm going to do liver and onions one time for myself. I know they won't like that, but I do.
Liver, onions, and a side of frog legs.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't
bon do it. Bon appetit!
I wouldn't cook it all at the same time.
You look so skinny. Eat frog legs. Liver is good for you.
I was so excited when I saw them at the grocery store. It's like, ooh.
Yeah, no. Anyway, let's get back to rutabagas.
Yes. That's how we got on this topic.
Rutabaga is a store, Rutabaga Paddle Sports. Darren is the one that puts it on. Darren Bush. And he's put out a statement this week. I'm going to share some news with you that's both difficult and deeply personal. After much prayer and reflection, I've made the decision to retire from retail and close the physical building part of Rutabaga Paddle Sports, effective the end of 2025. We're still around a few more months, but I wanted to announce it now.
There you go.
Decision wasn't made lightly or quickly. Believe me, it was one of the hardest things I've ever had to do, have done. Let me tell you why I'm making this choice now. So, like, the first thing we're seeing when we see the headline is another paddle sports
is going
store
under.
Is going down.
Yeah.
Started in paddle sports industry in 1990, selling canoes on weekends when I had a real job working at the state of Wisconsin Bureau of Public Health. Rutabaga has been my third major career change. I became a full-time manager in 94, GM in 2000, co-owner in 2002, sole owner in 2007. The journey has been one of the greatest joys of my life. I believe that life teaches you lessons, and when you've learned what you need to learn, it's time to move on to the next chapter. I thought I'd work at Rutabaga for a few years, get some management experience, then move on. Well, I didn't stop learning things. Every time I thought I was ready to move on, something threw a wrench into my complacency gears, and the learning continued. I mean, I bought a small business when Amazon just started selling books, and e-commerce was an unknown. Talk about a learning curve.
Yeah.
I was given some great advice by my friend Michael Hodgson, who said, when you leave a business, leave on your own terms. My next move is to answer a call to serving in a different way. After my heart attack a few years ago, I started to consider my future, and almost dying led me to comfort and support those who are on a similar, though more proximate journey, as well as their families. I've had some amazing experiences in the last 3 or 4 years, volunteering as a hospice chaplain and working with patients and their families. I've always found deep meaning in helping people, and it's time to keep doing that in a different way. Rutabaga is more than a shop, and what I'm most proud of is our community. We haven't just sold stuff. We've helped create communities that teach people to enjoy the outdoors, build relationships with nature and each other. Anyone reading this has been essential to that mission. That's what so many people talk about, too, is the paddling communities.
Yep.
The outdoor communities.
Serving the paddling community, right? Working with and in the paddling community. Yeah, it's you can give back as much as you can get out of it, and a lot of people have done that. And there's a lot of these businesses that started in back in the 70s, and there was a wave of them that came out in the 70s that really, over the last decade, they've just been slowly folding as people have retired and said, enough's enough, I'm moving on.
Well, and there's a lot of them that, the brick-and-mortar stores.
Yeah.
Everything's online.
You know, everything's online.
I love going to the brick-and-mortar stores.
I do, too. But now we're moving away from these personalized service opportunities and moving more to the big box, like NEC, Sale, REI. So these
mom and pop shops.
The mom and pop shops are going away, and we're ending up with just giant Costco style sales.
He says, I did explore other options. I looked into selling the business, finding someone to take it over. Honestly, I couldn't find a way to ensure that would continue at the same standard. I've seen too many businesses purchased and run into the ground, and it's ugly. So I'd rather close on a high note to see what we've created than see what we've created diminished. We just hit 995 reviews on Google with a 4.9 star rating. That doesn't just happen. The Rutabaga staff are the best people I know, and I'm truly grateful for them all. So the big thing is, because he puts on Canucopia every year, like the biggest paddle show in North America.
Yep.
So what about Canucopia? If you're closing, what's happening? He says that was non-negotiable. Canucopia will continue. Canucopia has been gathering place for our paddling community for over 40 years. I didn't realize it was been that long.
I know. That's
quite the time. I can't imagine a world without it. I'll continue organizing it, and we already have 35 exhibitors lined up for 2026. And the link went out just a few days ago. Canucopia will be a part-time seasonal responsibility for him. You haven't just been customers to me. You've been partners in building something meaningful. You've been my teachers. I've learned as much from you as I hope I've taught you. You've been friends who've made this journey joyful, and I care deeply about all of you. Now, many of you will ask, what can I do to help? Some of you already have. The best thing you can do is buy a boat, paddle, gear, clothing, or all of the above. Please. I have about 3 months to sell everything in the shop and the warehouse. That'll be a tough order. To quote baseball legend Lou Gehrig, I consider myself to be the luckiest man in the world. I also feel like George Bailey, lectured by Clarence the Angel from It's a Wonderful Life. Each man's life touches so many other lives. Remember, George, no man is a failure who has friends. By that standard, I am too blessed for me to imagine. Joseph Campbell famously said, follow your bliss and don't be afraid. The doors will open where you didn't know they were going to be. I'm taking leap into the bliss abyss, and it feels right. Not disappearing, I will see many of you on the water, and I'm sure of that, and at Canucopia as well. Darren Bush.
Cool.
Sad to see another store go.
Yeah.
You know, like I say, I like to go to the brick-and-mortar stores and peruse the goods, try on the stuff before I buy it, because there's nothing like waiting a week for something to arrive in your mailbox, and you follow all the instructions on their site regarding sizes find out.
Oh,
yeah.
Doesn't fit at all.
That's not even close.
Yeah.
Not even close. So, Darren, you'll be missed, but like you say, we'll see you out on the water, hopefully, and definitely at Canucopia, which I'm hoping to go to again this year, because we said we were going to, we couldn't do it this year because we're big plans were Japan, I'm looking at taking a couple of days and heading down that way.
There you go.
This year, so keep that in mind.
Mm-hmm.
Dun, 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 dun. I'm sure Tracy will come with me too.
There you go.
But she's riding in the back seat, or I'm going to let her. If anybody's going to fly down, let me know.
Yeah.
Because I'll drop her off at the airport with you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Chicago is not a good, good ride through. So,
Divorce Lake and Divorce Highway.
Oh, Divorce Highway. That's for sure. That's all I got this week. You got anything else?
Sorry, I just inhaled. Watch out for the hickory tussock caterpillar.
Caterpillars, yep.
And I'd like to tell you, so what was interesting is that when we got there, we saw a bunch of them. It's like, what? That's weird. I've honestly never seen one before. And so when we saw them crawling around, we had to Google it and did Google image search and stuff like that. And that's how we discovered what it was. But neither of us had ever seen one of these before. So it was kind of weird that way. It's like, how have I never seen one? Mm-hmm. And so over the weekend, we saw, say, 1,000 of these guys. And then I saw one of the typical striped black and yellow ones, mm-hmm. and one of the segmented black and yellow ones. So two others plus everything else. Oh, and what was horrifying was, I don't know, it's what's worse.
This is definitely going to get people out there.
Yeah. So at the comfort station, I think what's worse is when you don't know where they are, but there's, look at your pinky finger, the tip of your pinky finger after the last knuckle. So imagine, like 500 spiders that size. So all around the comfort station, up in the eaves, they were everywhere. I got a bunch of videos and a bunch of photos.
You pee.
And some of them had small bodies, but most of them had the big pinky finger bodies. And the next morning when we went to the comfort station, it's like, there's not a single spider here. So where are they?
Well, they finished using the bathroom and left.
Yeah, exactly.
All I'm picturing now is like pinky fingers with legs.
They were huge. Like I remember growing up, we had a woodshed attached to the house where dad kept stored stuff. Plus we kept our firewood for heating the house. And we had those big barn spiders, bigger than these ones we saw at Balsam. But, you know, it was like a gigantic spider, barn spiders. And here it was like, I'm looking up. It's like, so you go in to open the door. You look up. It's like, oh, what is that?
You know, all our listeners in Australia right now are thinking,
yeah,
baby.
You wuss.
You little wussy.
That's not a spider.
That's not
this
a
is
spider.
A spider.
did it attack you with a knife? Spider.
I'm going to cut you, man.
Yeah, what? That's not a real spider.
But yeah, but there's so many of them. Like, it's circled the whole comfort station. It's like, that is a lot of spiders.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it was a wild, wild weekend. We saw the typical squirrels and a whole bunch of chipmunks. And some of the chipmunks were getting a little frisky with each other. So I guess maybe it's that time of year. But exactly. So yeah, so it was animal or wildlife wise, it was interesting.
Alrighty.
So yeah,
I just stuck around the house, did some work around here that I let go all summer, and went to a movie, and that was about it. There is a new thing called Rally Crew.
Okay,
Whitewater Community's newest digital Eddie, they're calling it. I'm looking into that. Go to, if you want to check it out, it's rallycrew.com. Basically it's people that want to get out on the water, and it's brand new. They're developing an app for it, for your phone and everything, but you can connect with other people in your area. You can put up events, see events, a whole bunch of other stuff. So
sometimes it's hard to connect with other people of like-minded hobbies. Mm-hmm. And if you want to get together with people doing a whitewater trip or just out for the weekend for whitewater, check them
out. I signed up for it today, and so I'm going to check this out during the week and chit-chat about it. But if anybody else wants to take a peek at it and put their 2 cents in worth by the end of the weekend, let me know.
Yeah, and we'll review it next week.
Yeah. Other than that, that's all I got.
Excellent.
And apparently, according to Athena, it's time
She's been circling. I think she needs to go to the bathroom.
Yeah, I think it's
wants out.
She wants out. And now she's laid back down.
Oh, there you go. She's decided she can hold it.
Alrighty. Well, if you want to find out more about us, you can find us at paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. You can download or stream all our episodes on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, Player FM, and all your favorite podcast downloading sites. Or just go to the episode page at paddlingadventuresradio.com and you can stream or download all our episodes there. If you enjoy the podcast, please share it with friends, family, and fellow paddlers. I want to thank everybody for listening this week. I'm Sean Rowley.
And I'm Derek Specht. We'll see you next time.